What a week it's been, ladies and gentlemen, bold Americans. We're about to have fun. Why? Because it's the weekly recap show with Bolden and Michaels. And so you're here with us, and we're so glad that you joined. We can't wait to get this party started. So sit back, grab yourself a cup of coffee or whatever it is that you're into. You're watching or listening to America Emboldened with Greg Bolden and Chris Michaels. So let's rock.
America Emboldened.
Greg, I feel emboldened.
You don't know the founding fathers. You don't know what they did. You don't know what they sacrificed. We have lost touch with the principles in the Constitution. Nobody's read the Declaration of Independence. You are voting for socialism, and you got what you voted for.
Oh, we made it another week. You know, the world didn't end. Although Rob Thomas and Matchbox 20 told us a long time ago, you know, we got everybody's still rocking and rolling. Even Harry, who watches the show all the time, he's with us and he's watching and he's happy that World War III has not hit. We're enjoying life. We're having a good time here.
Well, we kind of called that out. We tried to. Nothing is going to happen, or, you know, nothing drastic is going to happen. I mean, we know certain people that claim that it's going to be the end of the world. And what? They negotiated it. Iran had 5 days to prepare for, you know, this strike against Israel. And Israel had 5 days to prepare for it, too. So
the face of war has changed so much since I studied it in the history books. Apparently now you go on WhatsApp and you send a WhatsApp message encrypted to your favorite president. And you're like, excuse me, Mr. President, we would like to launch 3 Scud missiles and 5 cruise missiles plus 132 drones. Can we have your permission? And the president says, as long as we have those proper coordinates so that way we can help take them all out, you're in. We can make that happen. I mean,
Yeah, you heard about the AI that's doing that, right? Yep. Lavender on the Israeli side.
Mm-hmm.
So they're able to track, I guess, the geolocation of WhatsApp users. And if they're in the same room as somebody they don't like, you're on that list. I mean, think about this. What happens if you, Greg Bolden, you're in a room with people that they don't like? How would you even know? Right?
I wouldn't.
Yeah,
I mean,
right. You wouldn't know.
Yeah. AI at this point in time is the biggest threat to humanity that we've been talking about.
Yeah.
But nothing's going to change.
No. It's really disturbing how the Israelis say that it is just as good as a human decision. So, like, think, extrapolate that to law, to traffic tickets, to, you know, medicine, insurance companies.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, okay, the AI said I don't get a payment. Great. And then there's no way to appeal it.
I try to, like, balance it, though. Like, as a musician growing up, when drum machines got really popular, again, in like the late 90s, I think Billy Corgan with Smashing Pumpkins, when he went solo, he started doing drum machines. And people were like, what are you doing, Billy? Drum machines have no soul. And I'm kind of wondering, are we going to get to a point where we're saying AI has no soul? Or they have us all fooled. Maybe AI is sentient and has some type of soul and something's been happening with all of that. But I think the thing that bothers me the most right now, though, are the people that don't see the fact that this is a geopolitical excursion that is completely staged in the responses of all the countries that are involved. What I mean by that is Putin is talking to Iran and saying, oh, good son, well done, Vladimir in Iran. And Iran's going, oh, thank you, Senor Putin. This is great, comrade. Meanwhile, you got Israel and Netanyahu going, oh, thank you, Mr. Biden. Continue to send those billions of dollars to us, and we'll respond exactly how you want us to. And Biden going, all right, don't make us look like a moron. Let's get...
He doesn't... He just says, don't.
He says, don't. Come on, man.
Fool. No, you're right. It's totally staged. And now you've got Netanyahu, right, who is bizarrely, if you're comparing him to his rival, he is showing restraint because his rival said, let's start nuking Gaza and let's start targeting Iran's nuclear facilities with nuclear weapons. I mean, this? Are we really talking about this? And then we hear, what's that nuclear power plant in the Ukraine? Zaporizhzhia or yes. something? I can't pronounce that stuff.
I can't pronounce any of it.
The Ukrainians have no problem sending drones to go attack that. And the Russians had to say, well, the IAEA was there and they witnessed the Ukrainian drones attacking that. Now, if that thing goes boom, the only people that it's going to hurt are the Europeans. Because right. the way the winds blow, it's going to blow directly into Poland and the rest of Ukraine. And yeah, so are we really looking at this kind of next stage in all of this? A nuclear war? I mean, remember the AI that went rogue in that scenario we talked yes. about like a month ago?
That was months ago, yeah. Yep.
The AI just said, well, we think that if we have to win this, we're going to use nuclear weapons. Certainly seems like they're using AI in the background for all this.
Well, there's a story that came out yesterday that I think has to do a little bit with AI that no one's really covering this. Somebody sent me a person that kind of brought it to my attention. So when I say no one's covering, I mean no one mainstream on the news is covering this story. Are you familiar with the camera company Nikon?
Sure.
All right. Did you see what happened with Nikon and NASA about a month ago that no one seemed to pick up on?
Yeah, I think you posted something on it.
I did. I'm going to put the story up on screen.
It's like
too.
A so, super duper camera or something like that?
Well, yeah. So NASA agreed to Nikon to develop what they want is a lunar Artemis 3 camera. They want something that is going to be able to work in the confines of the atmosphere of the moon for many years. So it can survive, it will be able to take great photos and be able to work well. And so they're going to modify what's known as the Canon Z9 camera. But here's the issue with the story. The very next day after they announced that they were going to be signing this deal with NASA, Nikon actually discontinued one of their flagship point-and-shoot cameras that, well, I'll let you think for yourself on this. If you knew that no one ever had created a camera as powerful as Nikon that could shoot effectively a 6,000 millimeter zoom and check out the moon and see the craters and measure them, and check out planets and actually using the focus of this P1000 camera, they were able to see the frequencies of the planets that they were giving off, the unique frequencies from the vibrations, which was really neat. That camera is no longer available as of March 1st, 2024. Now, don't believe me, they put you up that story to show that as well for everybody. What are the odds that on February 29th, they signed a deal with NASA that they're going to be able to help with this moon. And then the very next day they discontinue the camera that helps everybody see the moon. And it's a camera that was never before seen in technology until it came out.
That's bizarre. Seems like somebody wanted that off the market.
Yeah.
And the only way to get it off the market is to buy them out.
Correct.
So NASA must have thrown a bunch of cash at them to get this out of there.
So the first thing that I did yesterday was I went to go see if I could buy one of these cameras. And Walmart still had a few left. Nikon, it's discontinued, so it's out of stock. The camera yesterday was $1,078 as a bundle. I did not buy it because I do not have $1,078. Today, that exact same camera is now $1,800. And my guess is it's going to continue to rise as people realize that this is something you got to get your hands on right now if you want to still be able to see the moon without a high-end telescope and make images and videos. What don't they want us to see that's going to be happening on the moon? That's my question. I know it's conspiracy, but that's my question. What's going on?
I don't think it's as conspiratorial as you think. Because here's another little tidbit that came out this week. Joseph Biden has declared that we need to start creating time zones for the moon. And so you're asking yourself, why do we need a time zone on the moon? Yeah. And he's saying, well, we need to be able to maintain the same kinds of schedules on Earth. So if you're on the moon, you'll be able to find out and know exactly, you know, is it DC main time for that? So that's just bizarre. I personally think that this kind of ties in to the massive rains that we've been seeing in the Middle East, and also you know, all of the other slightly changed atmospheric reactions we're having right now. I mean, let's be honest, there is some kind of climate change going on. It's on a massive scale. It may be human assisted, but something is going on. Whether you saw that mm-hmm. big blob shoot out of Antarctica, remember that earlier in the week?
Yeah, that they thought was a wave,
right?
But then it ended up being an anomaly on the satellite.
Right. So my conjecture, to be conspiratorial, since we're going down this road, is that we're going to be able to start seeing different things, whether that's different types of things on the moon, whether that's more comets or more shooting stars. Maybe the constellations aren't in the spots that we've been told they're supposed to be. Maybe you're starting to see shifts like that. And they're trying to masquerade it all, in my opinion. And this also goes on a DNA frequential realignment too, because I personally think that mankind is a little bit more aware now on all levels, whether you're talking about on a physical level or a psychic level, if you will, than it was four decades ago. Mm-hmm. There's some kind of awareness increasing here. And so I personally think, you know, they're trying to deaden some of that.
Well, you know, everybody's favorite reptilian conspiratorial, David Icke.
Yes. What is he saying?
Well, he just put out this thing. He's like, why are all these individuals obsessed with Jesus Christ all of a sudden in the mainstream alternative media? And the video that he posted was one of Russell Brand saying the rosary. Now, the rosary is something that I know pretty intimately because that was like my go-to for many years as a Catholic. I would pray a rosary and meditate off each of the decades of it. And I've gotten out of that practice as I've kind of fallen away from Catholicism and more into being agnostic. But that all stated, I watched this video of Russell Brand explaining the rosary. And all I could think to myself is this part of the, and I'm going to use your favorite spelling and use of it, uh-oh, a reawakening with the capital A.
I stole that from somebody else.
Yes, you did. but is that what we're looking at? Are we looking at maybe there's like an agenda with, as the people here on Earth are becoming more aware over the past few decades, you're going to find people that weaponize what's already known to man in order to try to maybe vie for attention?
Well, I mean, if you're really going down the road of Gnosticism, then you have to start talking about demiurges and all of that, where some of these beings that we are supposed to be interacting with, they cannot create. So they only can manipulate. Humans can create. So we are capable of many wonderful things. But these demiurges have their own existence and they need to fulfill themselves in their own way. People conjecture that it is negative. So they manipulate what we do. So could be. I mean, that makes just as much sense as anything else. You see constant references to that kind of behavior and those kinds of beings all throughout ancient history. So, I mean, I'm the type of person where if you see all of these cultures, whether it's from India, China, Japan, or the Celts or American Indian, they're all saying the same thing. There must be something to it. I don't claim to know exactly what it is, but there's got to be something to all of that.
Well, Jimmy Corsetti, he's also kind of bringing people...
kind of brilliant, in my opinion.
Yeah, but he's making people aware that people are aware at this point in time that the technology that 6,000 years ago humanity had was much more powerful than what we are acknowledging in the history books in 12,000 years ago. He's trying to tell people that there's a cycle on Earth that causes this to get wiped out. My question as a critical thinker is this: which organizations are the protectors of the ancient text? Which governmental figures, so to speak, have the knowledge and protection of it? And is that one of the things that the Vatican holds on to? Is this one of the things that presidents get debriefed on as far as, you know what, here's where we are in the age of humanity, and eventually, you know, there's going to be an event, and it's not going to be a good day for humans, but we'll rebuild, and we just need to get a plan and make the most amount of money off of everybody while this is all coming to fruition. And according to all those individuals, that timeline is quickly approaching.
Well, I think the men in black are the ones that are protecting everybody. I mean, you saw the movies about them, so.
Now we're going down predictive programming.
No,
are we going to get Lawrence Fishburne and The Matrix now too?
No, yeah, sure. No, it's interesting about all that too, because everything here on Earth, if you go into Blavatsky and all that, I mean, we're not going down current events at all, but I mean, sure. Sometimes this is a little bit more interesting. Blavatsky basically comes out and says that this kind of thing is not unusual. This is all part of a cycle, and there's a duopoly going on between light and dark, and it's constant, and it's not avoidable. You have to deal with it. If you are incarnating on Earth, you are forced to deal with this lightness and darkness, right? And both sides are trying to vie over the other, but at the higher levels, your higher self, so to speak, you know that you can't get out of this relationship that light and dark play with one another. It's only how you play the game, right? It's only what you do in the face of adversity. And that's kind of inspiring in a way, because it really goes to say that, you know, this is really kind of a play. So you can do whatever you want. And then you factor in reincarnation, and you can do it as many times as you want too. So the other part that was interesting with, what was his name that you referenced?
Jimmy Corsetti.
Corsetti. There's another guy, and I'll send him to you.
Okay.
He references, and I thought this was brilliant, because I lean towards the, yes, there's got to be some kind of technology out there. Just look at the pyramids. Don't tell me that's, right, you know, slave labor, block and tackle. He found out a way to essentially create artificial granite out of ash. And he's been making little blocks, and he's been making little Easter Island heads out of his method. Now, what's interesting about his method is that he's now saying, okay, it's not lasers. It's not anti-gravity technology. What these people are doing is they're basically making a type of cement out of ash and a couple of other natural materials, pouring it into the locations that they need it to be poured into, and just molding it right in there. That's why you see all of these intricate blocks with 12 different sides at Machu Picchu in Peru. Machu Picchu in Peru. Everyone is perplexed by that. And he's going, well, they could have just done like a concrete method and created this artificial granite. I'm not saying that there's granite in Machu Picchu, but you get what I'm trying to go with. So it's really interesting when you just think about it. The easiest and simplest explanation is usually the right one.
Yeah, that's Sherlock Holmes. I love it.
Arthur Conan Doyle. All right. Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, it's like, when Sherlock and... why am I completely blanking? Sherlock and Watson go camping, right? And they wake up in the middle of the night, and Watson goes, Sherlock, are you seeing this? And Sherlock goes, what's that? And he goes, look, it's the Big Dipper. And overhead, I believe the full moon is just rising just above over there in that constellation. We're going to see it. And look, it's Capricorn. And Sherlock turns and goes, and what can you deduce from that? And he goes, oh, that there's a god and it's wondrous. Yes. And he goes, no, someone stole our tent, you dumb idiot. I love that one.
It's a good line.
It is. All right. So I've been trying. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
Well, one more thing that was interesting, because we had on, we did a podcast about Earth changes.
Yes.
And all of that. So there was a little bit in Norse mythology, and they talk about how the Earth actually shifted its pole 90 degrees.
Oh, yeah.
So the North Pole wasn't the North Pole. They said that the North Pole was essentially what we would consider east today. So where was that North Pole? Was it over Siberia? And if you're doing that, then that completely validates what he said about a 90-degree pole flip or pole wobble or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. So I just thought that was extremely interesting that we're reading about this stuff 100 years later, or at least I am. And it just validates everything that's coming out today, which, by the way, also kind of says that maybe these groups with this supposed occult knowledge, they're starting to leak that knowledge, what was considered hidden, so that the profane couldn't read it. And they're starting to leak it into society because we've reached a point where we got to do something different. So if you start seeding these ideas into people and making it go viral online, then you are going to flip the narrative. You are going to shift a consciousness, and people are going to be a lot more aware. Yeah, like flat Earth. Where did that come from? Like out of nowhere. It's everywhere.
Yeah, like I know Kyrie Irving, the basketball player, gets a lot of credit for the flat Earth stuff because he mainstreamed it. But I had never heard of flat Earth outside of talking about the early trade routes of those that traveled by boat, Magellan, thinking that the Earth was flat. I didn't know that there was actually still a subset of human beings that still had a belief that the world possibly could be flat and that there was a huge ice wall at the end. And all I could think is, I feel like I'm living in Game of Thrones now. Let's go to the North. The North remembers. Who would you be? Did you ever watch Game of Thrones?
No.
I was just curious who you would be in Game of Thrones out of all the characters.
Who's the liberal out there that always goes on these debates? He always looks like he drives to these events with his head out the window.
Oh, I don't
know. Or he combs his hair with a rake. And he was, oh gosh, I can't remember his name. He was debating people. He's a hyper-liberal. He looks like Peter Dinklage.
Well, you know what? Peter Dinklage, amazing actor, but also a raging liberal as well, from what I understand.
Oh, really? An actor being a raging liberal? You don't say.
I know. I'm really hoping, though, Emilia Clarke, if you see this, I'm really hoping that you're just a common sense individual.
Oh, and he gives the smile, too. The quarter-turn smile. That's really going to seal the deal. She's going to come running over.
No, absolutely not. But, you know, if you do find yourself, for whatever reason, listening to the show, just, you know, hello, how are you?
You know, just mosey on over. And...
Yeah. Anyway, I've been staying away a little bit more from politics.
Yeah.
And maybe that's going to upset some people with a show with the title America Emboldened. I think I'm still going the very bold places. I mean, obviously, we just talked about some crazy things here that maybe you hadn't heard elsewhere. But I'm getting fatigued myself from the constant barrage and the need to have a hot take. And so I hope you guys will join me on this journey of minimizing a little bit more the weight that I allow politics to have on me and this show and on you. We'll still cover it. I mean, I'm going to talk Donald Trump in just a second in the court case because there's something very interesting about it, but not from the standpoint of like getting all fired up and everything, because I just don't think it's serving me or you very well. I set out to do the show, Chris, to kind of like find out like, where can we bridge conversations? And at this point, I realized there is no bridging the conversation. That's where I've fallen down at, is I've kind of realized that there's no talking to people that don't want to have conversations. And so now I'm just looking to find my people, the people that think like you, think like I, and want to be part of this community. So I'm curious, how are you feeling about that? Because I know you do a lot of politics stuff as well.
Well, I think you're right. And I said it on my podcast this week that I just couldn't give a damn. I'm doing this just to do it and make sure I don't get rusty. And that's what it's been like for the whole week. I mean, I think tomorrow's pod or later tonight's podcast, I did a raging 10 minutes and 3 seconds just because I couldn't stand it anymore. And there seems to be something going on. I think it's an energetic shift of some kind. Or some planet in retrograde, for all I know. But this whole week, I'm like, I just don't care. It doesn't matter. Whether I talk about this or not, still going to go on. Whether I think it's fair or not, it's still going to happen. Yeah. And am I really changing anything? The answer is no. I'm just, you know, pontificating at nobody.
Not nobody. I mean, we have listeners.
Yeah. Well, I mean, directly in front of me when I'm doing a podcast, I'm talking to walls. Nobody hears me.
to the America Out Loud audience right now that listens to Unleashed with Chris Michaels or Last Call Caravan or this show, I do want you guys to know, like, when we're behind a microphone, and right now we have the camera in front of us too, and there's people watching online with us, and thank you for doing so. But it gets really quiet, you know, like no one normally, do people write to you, Michaels? They don't write to me that often.
No, every once in a while I get, you know, you're an idiot. Yeah. Or
I don't get a lot of that.
I haven't gotten one of those in a while, but yeah. I got a raging email one time. You're dangerous.
But my favorite review of the America Out Loud News Network is actually the one.
The whole network or just your show?
The whole network.
Okay.
So somebody put a review up on the iTunes side of their podcast format. And it said, you know, love the shows, love the content, except that leftist, Greg Bolden. And he cites, you know, sources that are known to be fake, like Reuters and the Associated Press. And I was laughing because I was like, because I'm quoting what's out there, you think that I'm a leftist. And I still wear that one with pride. That's a good one because obviously they only heard one show and they made a decision off me and they never got to know me, but it's great to see the way people react on that. But yeah. I like that feedback. I like hearing that. So write to people. If you're listening to stuff and consuming content, like comment, let people know that you're listening. It is helpful.
Even if it's positive. Hey, exactly. You did good. I thought this point was nice. I mean, we eat that stuff up. I mean, not to be panhandling for pats on the head.
No, I mean, Chris likes to be told that he's handsome. So if you guys just tell him that he's handsome, he can never hear it enough. So just be like, oh, that handsome Chris Michaels. And
you were just impressed that I was in a three-piece suit when you saw me.
Dude,
last
no, night. No, I'll tell you what I was impressed about that suit. Not to go back to that, because we covered the wedding. I was impressed that you pulled off a dark blue with black, and you did it with grace. There's not a lot of people that can wear a black vest with the blue suit jacket on top and make it work. And it was phenomenal. I was like, you know what? I wouldn't think that that would work together, but it all tied together. It was like the rug in the Big Lebowski, man. It just tied the room together. You did great.
Well, you need an honest to God tailor. that's what you need.
Now he's telling my suit sucked.
I didn't say that at all. I'm just saying if you want a suit like that and you want to look as amazing as I did that day, you need a tailor.
Well, I also need to lose like 20 more pounds to be as fit as you are in your suit.
Stop.
It's all right. I'm okay with that.
So I think you're right though. There's something clicking, and I think it's just fatigue.
It is.
I think a lot of people are just so tired. And this is another thing I was thinking of too. Why am I tired? Why is this becoming so tiresome? And I think it's because everybody, the citizen journalists out there, the people that are capable of critical thought, we see through everything now, right? We are so capable of just breaking down these stories. Judge Merchan with Donald Trump, we know he's incredibly biased. We know that all of these charges are ridiculous and nobody has ever faced these things before. But I think it's something along the lines of we feel as though we need to be acknowledged and we feel as though that our voices need to be heard. And they're not. And that's the real problem here. We're tired of shouting into the storm, or I believe the public at large is. Because think about this. If a mainstream media outlet said, you know what, you guys are right. The judge is biased. And Trump did get the short end of the stick for the past 8 years. And maybe he was a good president. What do you think would happen to the ratings on those channels? They go through the roof. Yeah. Oh, we can't worry. We have to worry about our, 80,000 viewers on prime time on ABC, you know, the ones that only buy pharmaceuticals. You know, what are you doing? Like, why don't you actually do something positive? Why don't you actually acknowledge your mistakes like NPR won't do with that CEO?
It's interesting because I'm not sure if you know this. I have a partnership with National Public Radio where I work. And so for the longest time, I've always been very, what's the word I'm looking at? I've just been like kind of guarded about what I say about National Public Radio. But about, well, I don't anymore because we still have a partnership. But about 9 months ago, I asked to be removed from the board. And they were like, why? And I said, because quite honestly, I don't align with the people that are hired at this point in time and the way that stories are covered. And so I think it's just best since we don't really see the same way. And also I have my show. I just don't want it to be a conflict of interest. I think it's best if I'm not serving on the board. At this point in time, when I first signed that contract with them, with the school, it was about 2018, I believe, 2019. It was before the pandemic. If you were to look at any media bias chart, you would see that NPR would have been mostly on the center. It was not the liberal cesspool of reporting that you see now. If you go to mediabias.com and look at those charts now, even media bias is starting to put them on the left-hand side of the column, and not just slightly to the left, but NPR has now pushed themselves into a spot where you know that there is going to be some type of liberal bias because the people that they continue to hire across the board, that's the way that they think. And that's the way that they prefer to cover the stories because they know that's who's going to continue to give NPR money from the public in order to continue the funding for those stories. And so I've kind of separated myself. I think that it's still good journalism from the standpoint of their structure of their stories is phenomenal. This American Life, as far as like the podcast side, still some of the best programming you can listen to.
Stop it. Ira Glass.
Ira Glass is excellent at what he does. Please. You may not agree with, you know, his viewpoint on things.
No, I don't agree with the way he speaks.
He's still phenomenal at what he does, though. Like, I can't, that's what I'm getting at. Like, at some point, you just got to be like, okay, I can disagree with the overall news organization. I can call it for what it is and not associate myself in that way. But I can also understand that there's a quality to the way that it's being done, even if I disagree with it, which I can't say that about all news.
Right.
I wouldn't say that about MSNBC.
Well, I can say that about broadcasters in general. Right. Like I can separate myself and say, you know, so-and-so is a good broadcaster or a good presenter or whatever. I mean, but I guess that's the real issue in all of this. So I think, so I wonder if we were to go back and listen to shows on NPR from the early 2000s, does our memory place them in the center? Or now that we have a better understanding of how they act, were they always this way?
Ooh, that, you know what? That sounds like a good challenge. I promise you, I'm going to go and look up some content from the early 2000s. And I'm actually going to answer that question next time we speak, because I don't know top of my head how I'll answer that if I'd be correct. So yeah, let me look and find out.
Because I remember, I actually found old clips of a show. It was MSNBC. And I'm listening to all of this stuff from 2003 when they were going to invade Iraq. Not one liberal was against it. It was all, let's go in. And all, we have to find these weapons of mass destruction, but we don't know if they're there. So the only way to find out is if we decimate a country. And they never were against it. None of them. So I listen back to it now, understanding how everything is manipulated a little bit better now in 2024. And right. I go, it's always been like this. We just never acknowledged it before.
That's possible. Again, that's why I said, let me listen. I'm going to listen back, and then maybe that's a whole segment we can do in the future.
Definitely. If my advice to NPR, bring back Click and Clack, and also bring back Garrison Keillor, if he's still...
Is he still alive?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Even if he's not.
Sorry, Garrison, if you are still alive, I don't know. Oh, man.
You needed better musical guests, though. Some of them got pretty long in the tooth.
Yeah. You know, they didn't all have Matchbox 20 like we did. I'm kidding.
No, actually, no, I don't know how we got 20. Them, but
I'm pretty sure we didn't. But if you're listening to the show, there will be no Matchbox 20 on the actual show that's on iTunes because legally I can't play it. But
no,
if you were watching online, you would have seen us rocking out at the beginning, getting you hyped for the show. Too bad you missed out on that.
Yeah, you missed out.
Hey, so Donald Trump, though, not to talk politics, but this is kind of an interesting thing. I think I read somewhere there's about 198 jurors that had to be dismissed because they told the attorneys that they could not remain unbiased during the trial. And I just want to know how you feel about the fact that one of the most American things that you and I can be asked to do is to serve on jury duty. As much as it might be a major pain in the ass, it is still one of the most American things that help us change the laws, the way that they function, because we can cite previous court cases in order to cite data to protect other people's rights. And there are 198 people, I think that was the number, so of course, sorry if I'm off by two or three, that were dismissed because they don't want to do their American duty. How do you feel about calling them Americans?
In a way, they did do their American duty because they felt as though that they couldn't fulfill the job. So instead of pretending that they could and lying about it and getting caught by Trump's lawyers, they said, I can't do this. Now, at the same time, who thinks on this earth that Trump could get an honest jury in New York City? You can't. I mean, New York City, I'm not going to lie, is some of the dumbest people on the planet. Oh, I've got 4 degrees. I've got a PhD. I'm a big finance guy. I'm a lawyer. I work in the entertainment industry. There's some of the short-sighted individuals I've ever met in my life. I mean, they truly live in their own little bubble.
To all of our New York City listeners, we love you,
care.
And we
prove
don't think
wrong.
That you're stupid. Chris Michaels thinks that you're stupid, and Chris Michaels is a New Yorker, so he has the
I
right
am.
To say so.
I can say these things unabashed. But who thinks that Donald Trump is going to get a fair trial? Nobody thinks that. And then you can ask around with all these lawyers, have you ever seen anybody be brought before a judge for these charges, especially a sitting president that's running for president again, and he's not going to get out of this court case until mid-June?
So I have a couple of things I think we're going to see happen. It was 196 jurors. I just found that out. Were dismissed. 12 jurors have been chosen as of this recording right now. So they are set for Monday to begin closing introductory statements and arguments. The jury is going to have, for the first time, I've never heard of this before. I think this is actually really interesting. Two lawyers were chosen to sit on the jury. Lawyers. I mean, so yeah, lawyers are American citizens too. They get called for jury duty just like you and I do. But they normally don't get chosen for the court cases because they know the ins and outs of the courtroom so much that they normally get dismissed. I gotta wonder if this isn't a win for the Trump side to have two lawyers that are going to be serving on the jurors box.
Let me play devil's advocate with a New York jury. One, this appears to be an anomaly, right? What are the odds, right? What are the odds that we'll go even further about the anomalies of this case? What are the odds, one, it's being brought forward? Two, that the judge has a daughter that raised $93 million off of his court case for the Democrats. Three, we've got lawyers on the jury, which you said doesn't work. It almost never happens. Unless you want Democrat lawyers on the jury to make the argument for the prosecution when the jury deliberates. That would be something, because then you can make sure you get the result that you put that you wanted to.
But that would require that you feel that these individuals are plants, and so to speak. And if you're able to dismiss 196 individuals, I find it hard to believe that that would be a plant at that point in time. I feel like, if anything, that would be one of those dismissals where you're like, nope, not allowing that.
Oh, please. Like the other juror who says, oh, I have no bias whatsoever. I can put it all behind me. And then they find all kinds of social media posts. I mean, these people can be dishonest. And this judge has proven himself to turn a blind eye to certain biases. So you're probably more right than I am, but I wouldn't put it past this judge to allow these kinds of jurors in there.
How many lawyers have you known in your life?
Let's see. A handful, including some judges.
Okay. So you know a handful. are these the type of individuals that seem emotional individuals?
When it came to Trump, yes.
Okay. Interesting.
Because otherwise, they're very cut and dry. This is the law. This is it.
I've always found lawyers to be one of two ways. Either super cut and dry and black and white, or to have like a sense of humor that goes with it and be goofy and aloof. But lawyers seldom to me come across as emotional people. I think that plays in Trump's favor because I think this court case is going to rely on the whole Stormy Daniels emotional side of money and, oh my God, it's a porn star sleeping with the president, allegedly. There's going to be the emotional tie that they need to work. And if a lawyer does not believe that, then I think that plays in Donald Trump's favor. So I'll be curious to see how this whole thing shakes out. I will not be watching with bated breath the way that people watch these court cases each day because of my kind of apathy at this point in time. It's going to be interesting.
I think the other benefit that Trump could possibly be having here is that it is 8 men, 4 women.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the gender does play a role in it, assuming they know what their genders are. So I think that could play into Trump's favor, but I'm still very suspicious about these lawyers that are on there. They had another few of them. Let's see. They've got one from Lebanon. He's retired. One from the Upper East Side. And she says, I have opinions, but I firmly believe I can be fair and impartial. Really? A New Yorker from the Upper East Side is going to be fair and impartial to Trump. First off, you can't live on the Upper East Side unless you're a liberal. So get that out of your head. An old money liberal, too.
All right. So I'm going to keep a list. If you live in New York, you're likely stupid. If you live in the Upper East Side, you have to be a liberal and stupid.
And old money rich.
Where do the smart people live and where do the poor people live? Let's just go through the list now.
Well, not in New York. See, look, this is okay, though, because now we're calling it out. We can see it for what it is. And you just got to move on from it. You got to move on from it because it's going to happen. And whatever happens does happen. And it's up to Trump's lawyers to actually do this correctly. I mean, in spite of all adversity, you know, trying to go after the bond company so that he can't even post the bond, right? That's crazy. Trying to disbar any lawyer that stands for Donald Trump, that's also crazy. I mean, all this stuff should be against the law, and somehow they're able to get away with it.
So I'm going to make a prediction. Tell me if you agree with the prediction. At some point in time during this trial, Donald Trump will be imprisoned either for the gag order, going somewhere when he's supposed to be in court, whether it's Barron's graduation ceremony. He wants to be thrown in jail, even if it's for 48 hours in the slammer. Tell me I'm wrong. Why?
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. Think about it this way. I am Donald Trump. I'm a former president being brought before a Democrat judge in a crooked case. And I went to my son's graduation and I got thrown in prison for going to my son's graduation. Could you imagine the fundraising bonanza that would just unleash?
We're on the same page then. We're definitely on the same page on that.
I mean, it is crazy to think that one, a judge would even turn him down to do something like that, to go to his son's graduation. But two, he would make so much money. He'd make so much money. Think of all the sympathy votes.
Now, there are people saying that, like, the judge never mentioned anything about this graduation, that this is something that he brought up himself, which is why I'm thinking, that's odd.
Right. Planting the seed, because every judge is going to tell everybody in the courtroom, you've got to be here. Otherwise, you may end up in the clink.
Right.
It's standard. This is nothing new. That statement is pretty standard. But what's not standard? Section 702 coming up.
Hmm.
Did you hear anything about that one?
Section 702.
Yeah, FISA court and all that.
Yep.
So the big deal that everyone's making off of this is that currently the government can hoover up all of your information, but they've got to go through providers like Google and Verizon.
Correct.
And they are broadening who can now be forced to hand over your information. And that is essentially anybody that provides you with Wi-Fi. That could be your landlord, could be a Starbucks, doesn't matter. Now we understand why 5G got put into place so quietly during COVID. we need our extra bandwidth for all this.
Well, that's an interesting thing too, because at some point in time, we're going to hit a bandwidth crunch where the data can't flow. Right. You can't just continue to build this type of system without actually killing human beings. And I mean that literally. You're going to fry people if we continue to go up the spectrum beyond 5G. So there's got to be some type of limit to what they're able to do until they come up with a different technology. But this whole concept of, there's two things that I think are interesting here. In talking about the reauthorization of that section and looking at the votes and seeing all the different people that voted to basically say that you don't have a constitutional right to privacy. Within all that, I started thinking about, where is the data being stored? Do you know where most of these servers are located? Because I looked into it. I was actually shocked to see this.
Isn't it in Utah? Isn't it something the size of a football field or Montana?
So that's one of the locations. But the other location is actually not in the United States.
Don't say space.
The other frontier. The oceans.
Interesting.
Yeah, so apparently the reason why they're building these data centers underneath the oceans and lakes is because it offers a cooling feature for right. all the data securely, as well as it makes it much more difficult to access and or the sabotage and get rid of information. So this conversation that we're having right now in many ways is likely traveling somewhere to a nondescript location underwater, and our entire recording is being data tracked and logged there. And so if Section 702 can unlock information, what I'm wondering is, if a conversation's recorded outside the boundaries of a country and stored in an ocean somewhere at a depth where we can't find, is that data open to international, no rights, anybody can have it anyway? And has that been a way around all of this to begin with? Is that the reason really why they're building these?
Right. Anything off of, beyond 5 miles from a coastline.
Correct.
International waters. You can do anything you want.
So is our data still ours once it goes more than 5 miles off a coastline if it's being held there?
Good question. We should figure that out.
Yeah.
When you said that it needed cooling, mm-hmm. the first thing that flashed up in my mind was Antarctica.
Yes.
So couldn't you store the world's data in some place extremely cold, like Antarctica?
I guess you could, yeah.
I mean, that would be the coldest place that you could go. Still have it fired up. And there are a lot less restrictions, I would assume, there for types of energy.
Yeah.
I mean, you can probably do zero-point energy down there, and no one would know.
Yeah, there's an article here, December 6th, that came out. Microsoft had to get a data center, retrieved it from the ocean, and had to figure out how to keep it working. So this is kind of an interesting thing, but you can find the project was called Project Natick. So if you guys want to learn a little bit more about what we're talking about, look up Project Natick. I'm clicking on that here too, so I can pull that if I can get information. Here it is. Check this out. So this is what it looks like for those that are watching. It's got this little almost submersible submarine that is going to have all these data points in it that they can hook up for the information. And so data centers powered by offshore renewable energy. I mean, that to me is very interesting. I want to dive into this, no pun intended, a little bit more on a future show, but I'm going to look into a little bit more before we do so.
That's pretty interesting. I didn't know it was that well underway.
Oh yes. Yep.
So, I mean, that also reminds me of the Global Commons.
Correct.
Which means, technically, if it's in the global commons, then it is mankind's data.
That's correct.
So it's almost like a record.
It really, isn't that what a podcast is?
Right. A species record.
Yeah. I mean, we are creating a record every time we submit a show to the network, every single time we put up our own show. This, it's a record. When people have a digital footprint, it's a record.
Oh,
and
man.
So now it's being stored for infinity. It's pretty interesting.
Gosh. That's going to be disturbing. Some things I've said in the past. Holy moly.
For forever.
Ever. I'm glad the F8. Oh, man.
Did you see who came out of Mothballs?
No. Who?
Woody Allen.
Why?
So Woody Allen gave an exclusive to Roger Friedman from Showbiz 411, in which he discussed his movies, why he was writing a book about his life. And there's an interesting section in this interview that I don't think anybody was expecting to come up. But guess what he spoke about?
Underage sex.
So close. Jeffrey Epstein.
Oh.
So,
is he a close partner of him?
So Jeffrey Epstein apparently lived next to him, invited him over. And so they brought up in this article, they're basically, you know, what was your relationship? And he said, well, basically, you know, me and Sun Yi, his partner, lived around the corner from Epstein. And he was hosting saloons at his townhouse. And so he goes on to tell them that he had some dinners with them that were college lectures. But he said they weren't all college lectures. He quoted, "We'd get a call saying, come over because, you know, the ambassador from this country is having dinner or there'll be journalists. One evening, he had an evening of all comedians. And one evening, he had an evening of all magicians." Did you catch the reveal in that? And I don't mean that as a pun for magicians. He says, is having dinner and they'd be journalists. Isn't it interesting that people still to this day ignore this story? I'm curious who these high-profile journalists were at these Epstein dinners with comedians and magicians and Woody Allen. Now, Woody goes on to say there were no young girls at these events, and he hadn't even heard of Epstein before this. He says, no. He goes on to say that he met Prince Andrew. He said, they said, we're having probably a group of people over there to meet Prince Andrew. You know, it didn't mean anything to him, Woody observes, meaning Andrew had no interest in Woody Allen. But Sun Yi, you know, always followed the royal family, always read about them. I don't think we said two words to him, but he was there and people would speak to him. But, you know, he seemed like a quiet, you know, guy. Now, doesn't Woody Allen have his own kind of checkered past with women?
Including his current wife. Yes. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what? The apple doesn't fall too far from the tree, especially if you are in those very wealthy circles like him. So I think Mr. Allen is omitting.
So do I.
Some
facts. I think he's rewriting the past in order to pave his future. Exactly.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Naturally. I mean, Woody Allen, please.
Yeah.
Stop. I mean, if you just read any of the stories about his wife, or remember that leaked audio?
Yes.
Where she was very upset talking about his kid and saying, how dare you? How could you do this? How could you do this? And you don't ever find out what exactly this was, but we can all put it together.
Yeah.
So Woody Allen, I have zero faith in your comments. Trust you as far as I could throw you.
I thought it was an interesting article.
No, you're right.
You know, just I wasn't expecting him to come into the headlines, and especially not come back into the headlines and talk about Jeffrey Epstein and have it published. But I always look for those little tidbits, the things that the journalist gives us that perhaps we weren't expecting to see in the piece. And I was shocked when he's like, oh, yeah, there were journalists there, comedians, because this goes with everything we heard about Epstein. People like, what was it? David Blaine, I believe, David Copperfield. They were magicians that were rumored to have hung out with Epstein. They were on the flight log, as well as Chris Tucker, the comedian, and plenty of other comedians as well. So this seems to go with the narrative that, yeah, this guy, he continued to host these parties and get some of the biggest names in all of Hollywood and entertainment and get information on them. And now they are tied forever. And we still have no information of any of those individuals. So,
no,
you know,
it was funny. I read something, and this is, I have nothing to validate with this at all, other than a comment. Somebody commented that they wouldn't be surprised that Jeffrey Epstein with his Zorro Ranch was working with Dulce Air Force Base and mapping the human genome, which Bill Clinton started up.
Right.
Remember that?
I do.
And they found, what, 97% of your DNA is junk. It doesn't mean anything. You can get rid of it. What? No. It's there for a reason.
So maybe we'll land our plane here for today's show. I'm getting, and I sent this to you, and you said you're seeing it as well. I'm getting all of these posts recommended to me of people that are trying to hack their DNA and live forever or age slower. And so there's a bunch of different individuals. Like there's this one guy who's like 56 years old, but he looks like he's like 25 and he's biohacking his body at this point in time. I think Tucker Carlson had one of the guys on that's like drinking the blood of his son,
right,
and getting the plasma, not drinking, but he's getting plasma infusions. I'm embellishing here. I just don't want to get flagged for that. But no, he's getting plasma things, and now he's slowed down his aging. It's like 0.66 years per year, which means that over the course of almost 2 years, he shaved 1 year off. Why is it we're starting to see this, you and I, in our feed so much?
Good question. I don't know what I bought recently, but that usually shows up. Whatever's on my credit card, the ads start populating that goes along with that. I think there's a push on X to have a more masculine tone. That's what I've noticed, at least in my feed, like the Andrew Tates and all that nonsense. I don't follow Andrew Tate, but I do think that there is a push to have more of that. Now, this whole thing reminds me of
this. Is yeah, the there guy. We go. Chuando yeah. Tan, 56 years old.
Yeah.
Does this look like a 56-year-old?
No. Absolutely not.
This guy looks younger than me.
Wait, go back to that title, to the front of that magazine.
Hold on. I don't know if I can at the present moment. That's right. This thing, like it's...
So this whole thing reminds me also. There it is.
This one?
Yeah. Fit at 51.
Sorry. Yep. It won't let me stay. Okay.
You can't keep it there. It's all right. Fit at 51. So what's the reference to 51, right? It's so sure it's his age, but maybe there's something else in that magazine that they're trying to put out there and display for everybody. But this also reminds me of this constant chase for immortality. And that's as old as mankind itself, right? They're always looking for the Holy Grail. They're always looking to extend their life. And they're only looking to extend it in the physical. There's never the spiritual, right? They're never talking about spiritual eternity. It's always physical eternity. So it's right. this idea that you're stuck to material possessions. It also reminds me from Catherine Austin Fitz. And Catherine Austin Fitz basically said that the reason why we're seeing such a depopulation effort across the planet is, what are you going to do as an elite when you know you have technology that allows you to live to 160, but you don't want to give it up to the basic person that lives to an average age of 70? You've right. doubled your lifespan. And these regular people, they can't afford it, and you don't want it to be in their hands. So I think the technology is there already. I agree with Catherine Austin Fitz on this one. And this would not surprise me at all. Now, why are we seeing it? Once again, I don't know. That's a weird algorithm that I can't figure out.
So this one guy that I saw, the story that I sent to you, he has managed to get it down to about $30,000 in order to biohack himself per year, which is the cheapest. That's what the article was about. It's the cheapest people have really been able to get biohacking down to.
What does it include?
So it included parts of the diet, the supplements, the hyperbaric oxygen therapy, the different testing that he does constantly, the plasma renewal that he does. But he spends about $30,000 a year in order to make that happen. My question for you is this. Would you do this type of therapy if you knew that you could live? Because no one knows what day is guaranteed. You get a car accident tomorrow. But would you do that type of therapy if you knew you were guaranteed to live to be 140 and your body by the age of 100 would be more like the body you have now?
Good question. If it was affordable, sure. Sure, I would do it. I mean, I basically do it now in a low key form by watching what I eat and taking certain supplements on my own But the idea of wanting to live forever in a physical form is very grotesque to me. Or uploading my consciousness into Microsoft's undersea data center is also grotesque for me as well. Like, I would never, ever, ever want some kind of android with my personality. I mean, people don't want it now. Could you think of an android living to infinity? You know, it's outrageous. But would I do it to extend it a few years? Probably.
Okay.
Probably if it was affordable.
I would do it if it was to give myself a better quality of life.
Yeah.
But not quantity.
Right.
So where I'm going with that is, like, you know, if this type of therapy could get you to stop having migraines, or this type of therapy could help keep your heart healthy so you're not dying of a heart attack at the age of, you know, 50. Yeah, count me in. That sounds great. Improving the overall ability of my body. But I still feel like, you know, dying at the age of like 85, 90, that's an honorable life.
That's a long time.
It's a long time.
There's nothing wrong with
that. No. I hope I see 85, 90. But, you know, no day is guaranteed. But I guess this quest, or this want to live forever or for a lot longer, just seems foreign to me. I feel like we're not meant to live, right? No. We're not. But everything we're doing feels unnatural at this point. That's concerning to me. I don't know why people want to hack and be unnatural. That's just me.
I think it's this tie to the physical. I think people don't... If people had a better understanding of the spiritual and the metaphysical, then they would realize that this quest for immortality is actually alchemical. It's not a physical immortality. It is a spiritual immortality. I mean, once again, we can go down that road, but we're not going to. We don't have enough time. No. But it's a lot deeper, and people only take it for surface value. And that's the real sad part about it.
All right. Well, look, as we go into our weekend here, predictions, Iran, Israel, has everything calmed down now? What are you hearing?
I'm hearing that Israel is targeting Iran's nuclear facilities. And Iran said, go ahead and try. We've already reinforced it, and we'll target yours. So... Even though Israel doesn't have any nuclear
weapons. Nanny, nanny, boo-boo.
Yeah, right. You know, but it's all, you know, improv. Nothing is staged.
Right. Well, we'll have to hang in there. You know, you heard it from us first, ladies and gentlemen, that there was not going to be World War III, that everybody just calm down and stop letting the fear mongers get you. And we were correct. We've made it through another week, and it was actually a good week. It's been a nice one. I'm going to enjoy my Friday with everybody else here. I hope that you guys all have a good one. Michaels, I hope that you have a great weekend too. And we'll do this all again next week.
Sounds good to me.
All right. All right, bold Americans. We hope that we honored your time well here on the show. We'll be back once again next week to do this all again, starting with some solo episodes from me on Monday on the America Out Loud News Network. As always, make sure you go and you follow Chris Michaels at Last Call Caravan. Again, at Last Call Caravan, give him a follow over onto the X or Twitter feed, as well as you can check out the Last Call with Chris Michaels podcast. That's available on Spotify and everywhere you like your podcast. And you can check him out right on the America Out Loud News Network with Unleashed, the Political News Hour. And you can always help support my show, patreon.com/AmericaEmboldened. If you enjoyed this content, you enjoyed the show, feel free to become a subscriber, either free or paid. Your support is appreciated. Hope that you have a great weekend and look forward to seeing you all very soon. You've been watching or listening to America Emboldened with Greg Bolden and Chris Michaels, both here on the America Out Loud News Network and all your social media feeds. Be bold, America.